Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little boy named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed, naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. Thanks for supporting us for the past 100 episodes. Don't forget to subscribe and give us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also support us by visiting our Patreon page, where you can find out how you can join us for our monthly patron webinar, where we do a deeper dive discussion about all things perimenopause.
The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast. I'm back again with Dr. Tony for the next part to perimenopause and certain treatment options, things that have been studied in terms of supplements, herbs, acupuncture, hormone replacement therapy. So we're going to dive into what the research says. And remember, it's not a one size fits all, right? Because hormones are so variable during this transition time, but we're going to cover things that people have noticed benefit with, but discuss with your practitioner what's appropriate for you. So I'm excited to go through some of the research, Tony.
Absolutely. You know, it's really great to go through all of this information that we have been in, you know, the past few episodes to really let everyone out there know that while definitely research, especially in perimenopause and menopause, is not super robust. We do need a lot more research, that there is research out there, and we have different scientific studies that can really help us get more information on what women can kind of consider and think about and discuss with their healthcare practitioners as well.
Definitely. I'm part of, I do some continuing education through Dr. Jordan Robertson, a naturopathic doctor in Burlington, and she comes from a research background. So she compiles all of the research studies and puts them together. So I've learned so much by going through her courses, and we're going to share some of that information as well as things that we've come across. And one thing that's come up a lot in the research is soy and soy intake and soy protein intake. And I know a lot of times, you know, practitioners can shy away from prescribing soy. And I am more a fan of soy in terms of fermented forms like tempeh or miso, for example. But they have studied soy in menopause and perimenopausal hot flashes. And they have shown a reduction in hot flash frequency and severity by getting in regular soy protein in perimenopause and postmenopausal women. And they are showing that it can have a positive effect on improving cognition and memory in postmenopausal women too, if used, you know, soon after their last menstrual period. And you typically have to, you know, have some soy daily for at least 12 weeks. So we're not saying go and have soy every day, but this is really fascinating research, right? Because they have the phytoestrogens in there too. So not only potentially soy can support reduction in hot flashes and their frequency and severity, but support even mood too, reducing depression and anxiety in menopause, as well as brain health and memory too.
And it's really interesting because there has been more people shying away, I find, around soy when it comes to not especially women's health, but also even men's health as well. But, and this is where I think even the research can really be helpful to look at, you know, what is it about soy? What do we need to think about in terms of soy? And yeah, like you, Lisa, I definitely like people to focus on the traditional forms of soy, not necessarily having a lot of soy milk or veggie ground round, or again, really highly processed soy products, but looking at things like miso, natto, tofu, tempeh, and to really, for people to recognize that this phytoestrogen food source is providing what we can almost think about as a weaker form of estrogen that could kind of take up the spot of estrogen in our receptors, so that potentially stronger estrogens or xenoestrogens and other hormone disrupting chemicals don't have the same kind of effect in the body. Because there has been some research suggesting that higher intake of soy is related to a reduced risk of cancer and a number of different types of cancer, ovarian cancer, breast cancer, lung, colon, gastric cancer, and even prostate cancer in men.
Definitely. And with the hot flash and menopausal support, it is important to recognize that it can take about 13 to 14 weeks to get like half of its maximal benefit and up to 48 weeks to gain or to get most of the like 80% of the maximal effect. So it's something that they're looking at more as a long-term treatment. And then it may actually help bone health too, right? Those phytoestrogens in soy may help to increase the bone osteoblastic activity. So meaning your bone cells that kind of build and maintain bone are heightened, and then it reduces serum osteocalcin levels. So blood levels of a marker that shows your bones are being broken down. And this one study showed that if you had like some soy isoflavone supplement, if you had it just twice a week, two meals twice a week to be exact, that there was those changes in terms of osteoporotic markers.
Really key when it comes to supporting our bone health as our hormones are shifting, for sure. Another source of phytoestrogens, one of my favorite sources of phytoestrogens, is flaxseed.
It's not beer?
No, it's not beer.
That used to be my favorite source.
We talked about beer as a source of phytoestrogens, so we'll link to our previous episode where we talked about the benefits of beer and non-alcoholic beer especially. But no, my favorite source of phytoestrogens is ground flaxseed. So I'm a big fan of recommending ground flaxseed for most women in my practice. And there's not a lot of evidence suggesting that it alters our circulating sex hormones. However, there was a study that showed that flaxseed and taking flaxseed can shift the ratio of different estrogen metabolites, the 2-hydroxy to 16-hydroxyestrone. And that shift in increasing that ratio is associated with a lower risk of breast cancer. So again, that idea of taking in that phytoestrogen with flaxseed, in addition to even potentially looking at the source of phytoestrogens from soy, does lower risk of breast cancer.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? And just back to the soy briefly, they did look at it in terms of the bone health benefit. It was best to take in pre and perimenopausal women. So you want to get it in as you're starting to transition. You don't want to wait until you're postmenopausal because it may not have the same benefits. You want to give it as that estrogen's, you know, declining as opposed to when it's kind of hit its rock bottom, right? To help with that bone health. And we do know for bone health, you also have to consider vitamin D, vitamin K, you know, some healthier sources of calcium. So it's not in isolation, just the soy for your bone health.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And again, that's almost, you know, really similar to what I was talking about with Dr. Andrea Prue in terms of really using estrogen before you get into menopause to support your muscle mass. And again, that idea of getting in a good amount of protein and really doing some weight-bearing exercise and strength training in order to do that as well.
Definitely. Yeah. And then some other side benefits of soy before we wrap up with soy, that there was with the isolated soy protein, that there was a study that showed it significantly reduced cholesterol, triglycerides in postmenopausal women. And there may have been a slight decrease in their waist to hip ratio, but that could also be because they're getting some more protein in potentially too.
Perfect. Right. And who doesn't like a decrease in their waist to hip ratio?
I'll take it.
Right, exactly right. Now, when we're looking at some other nutrients, I mean, it's funny. I'm going to go back, Lisa. We weren't necessarily going to touch on this research around soy and depression, but I just, you know, especially as we were going to talk about fish oil for depression, I think it's this study on women who had taken soy protein in the form of soy milk combined with a soy isoflavogenistein with walking did reduce or showed a relief in depression. So especially the group who took the soy milk with the extra soy isoflavin. So the fact that, you know, it was a small study done, but over half of the women had experienced a decrease in depression is pretty amazing. And we also see some research being done on fish oil or omega-3 fatty acids are really key. Those are our essential fatty acids. So it's not something that our body can make. It's something that you do need to take in through food or a supplement. And this is where they really found that the intake of omega-3 fatty acids were inversely associated with depression symptoms in early perimenopausal women. So what that means with that inverse association is the higher the omega-3 intake, the lower the depressive symptoms. And they actually even did a study in women with menopausal symptoms. They had treated women for 6 months with DHA, which is one of the key omega-3 fatty acids in fish oil. They used 625 milligrams of DHA. And they had women take that for 6 months, and they reported an improvement in all psychological categories, and also including sexual arousal and lubrication. So that's really great.
That is really great. So get a good quality fish oil, eat good quality sources of fish, like the smaller, fattier fish, more wild caught salmon, sardines, anchovies, herring, you know, all the ones that people love, right? Well, caught salmon is good, but anchovies, sardines, and herring, people are always like, oh, that's disgusting. But you can get it through a fish oil supplementation. And then you know exactly how much of that DHA and then the EPA, the other component you're getting as well. So really easy to get in. They make them taste better. It's not like the cod liver oil you might have taken as a child. They have citrus flavor, strawberry. So there's easy ways to get that in, even in capsule or soft gel form. And then melatonin, we know, can change. So in women in perimenopause, they had a significantly lower 24-hour melatonin level if they were a poor sleeper. So taking even just, you know, people typically don't need a lot of melatonin, because if you take more than 3 milligrams, sometimes you get that groggy hangover effect or really vivid dreams that may be a little disruptive. But even, you know, 3 milligrams improved subjective sleep ratings and reduced some of the menopausal symptoms in postmenopausal women. So people do notice benefit with their quality of sleep too. And we know it has huge antioxidant benefits. We know it helps to support our immune system. So it's not just for jet lag and switching time zones. It still can be a benefit, even if you're a good sleeper, for some people, just for that immune support activity, that antioxidant activity. There's potential anti-cancer effects to it as well.
And I find it really interesting that they found that women in perimenopause had significantly lower levels of melatonin, both overnight and 24 hour. And it didn't matter if those women had a good sleep or a poor sleep, or, you know, especially in general, whether that woman was a good sleeper or a poor sleeper. So it's interesting that there is that confirmation that as we age, we have that lower level of melatonin, and then supplementing it can definitely help with sleep and with reducing those menopausal symptoms.
Yeah. And a lot of times people are like, well, I fall asleep okay. But the less melatonin you have too, there is some effect on how long you sleep as well, and the quality of your sleep. So even if you fall asleep well, it still can benefit you.
Yeah, that's perfect. And now there's some really interesting research around creatine. And this is something that, Lisa, you had mentioned in a previous episode that you've started to use and to support for, you know, recovery, for your physical activity, to help to support your muscle mass. Mm-hmm. But there's also some suggestion that can really help with mood and cognition and sleep.
Definitely. So when people hear creatine, they think, oh, these are for like the bros at the gym who are trying to build up their muscle mass. But we're actually finding there can be benefit with maintaining muscle mass as we age in perimenopause and beyond. So, you know, as females, we don't need to necessarily do the extremely high doses that they do in the gym, like usually about 3 to 5 grams per day with a meal that has a little bit of carbohydrates in it. It can be uptaken better, but it supports your muscle. So your muscle takes it up and it becomes stronger. So you're not going to turn into, you know, He-Man or She-Man, if you will, but your muscles are going to be getting more benefit from the resistance training that you're doing. So it's key you pair it with resistance training. So your muscles get stronger and it helps to reduce the recovery time, but they're looking at it to support mood, cognition, and sleep too. So the more you had in your diet, there was less occurrence of depression. So it's pretty fascinating. And then they're even looking at giving it or supplementing it when people are on antidepressants to help them have an accelerated and an enhanced response. So, you know, with the antidepressants, there can be several weeks before patients feel benefits. With creatine, this may shorten that time and enhance how they feel from the antidepressant medication. So potentially, you know, maybe needing less of a dose, so less side effects potentially too. But in perimenopause, it can also support, you know, if you're not sleeping well, your brain can still function. You can still have good cognitive function, even if you're more sleep deprived. Of course, you want to figure out why that's happening and get a better sleep if possible, but it can help make up for that in terms of cognition the next day.
I wonder if that would also help with sleep deprived parents as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So yeah, which parent isn't sleep deprived, right? At any age, I think it's like, as an infant, they're crying and feeding all night. As a toddler, they might be having bad dreams or they just want to cuddle. And then as teenagers, you're staying up until they get home because you're wondering what they're doing and if they're safe. So sleep deprivation goes along with parenthood for sure.
Okay. Creatine might be the key, people.
Exactly.
So we'll have to keep that in mind. Now, it's again, and interesting that they're using creatine to really help to support people who are taking antidepressants, because there have been a few studies done on acupuncture when it comes to mood and depression in perimenopause. And a number of studies have found that, you know, looking at the 2-week mark where they're comparing doing acupuncture with someone who is on an antidepressant, an SSRI, that at the 2-week mark, acupuncture was actually better at getting a better score when it came to those people scoring their depression and rating their depression. So acupuncture was quicker at reducing depression symptoms than was something like an SSRI. And also, you know, with using acupuncture, then you're also necessarily, you know, dealing with less side effects, and even a number of other studies. There was a meta-analysis of 16 different randomized control trials with a number of different patients where they did find that acupuncture was more effective than antidepressants in general. So really something to consider when it comes to dealing with mood changes around perimenopause. Also, acupuncture has been used to treat insomnia in perimenopause. And, you know, especially having those changes in sleep, you know, something to consider compared to using some prescription drugs for sleep. Acupuncture was found to really improve sleep on really a same level or even increasing, you know, in the improvement in different sleep ratings that that people were taking, as well as even showing an improvement in how people rated their menopause and their menopause symptoms as well.
I know, it's so fascinating, right? They're even looking at it. There was a study that found if you were getting it for vasomotor symptoms or hot flashes, your success was related to how many treatments you had over the first 8 weeks of treatment. So you want to get several treatments a week for that first 8 weeks to get the most benefits. And we know there's heat releasing points in acupuncture, right? So acupuncture, there's points to balance the yin and the yang energy. And yin is, you know, estrogen, yang is stereotypically more kind of the male heat energy. And through menopause, the yin, the estrogen goes down. So there's more of that yang, that heat energy. So there's points that help to release that. And then we know, you know, after an acupuncture treatment, if you're not scared of needles, your nervous system is definitely calmed down, right? You're more in that parasympathetic nervous system, that rest and digest. And I call it acu-stoned. So a lot of patients and myself included, after an acupuncture treatment, you're kind of like, where am I? And you feel like you're on this different realm. You're in a different world, you're a little bit slower, because it really does help to, you know, bring that nervous system down to a calm state. And that is going to benefit sleep, right? A lot of people fall asleep during an acupuncture treatment, because that's the only the time of the day where they get to have some time to unwind and relax. So for those benefits, it's really noticeable. Even with one treatment, people feel cooler after. If you do certain heat releasing points, they feel more calm, more grounded, and can have a better night's sleep even just after one treatment. You know, I find in clinic it makes a big difference.
And a really great form of self-care. And yeah, really important to kind of look at how often you're getting it, especially when you first start, and how much time you can really invest in yourself that way.
Yeah, and something to recognize too, as moms, we're giving so much to other people. And there's something to be said about having a treatment, someone caring for you, whether it's through a massage, an acupuncture, your naturopathic doctor, you know, assessing kind of what you need and where you're at. That in and of itself is healing too, because we're putting out so much energy. So you're filling your cup up by getting treated by someone. And a lot of times we don't make that time, but, you know, an hour here or there, once a month to get your acupuncture or massage treatment can make a world of difference for sure. And I know as a practitioner, I need to get treatments from my naturopath, from my massage therapist, from my acupuncturist, for me to feel like I can function at my optimal level. And I think you've been into floating lately too, right, Tony?
Yes. Again, another great way to just like get away, literally get yourself into a float tank and be soaking up those Epsom salts and floating on them. It's really fantastic.
Amazing. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So now a big piece of dealing with menopausal symptoms in perimenopause and menopause has typically been hormone replacement therapy. And this is where, you know, a hormone replacement therapy can be a big topic, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it in more episodes as well. And especially with more research on hormone replacement therapy, I mean, it's definitely something to really consider when it comes to perimenopause and menopause. And there's definitely some challenges, you know, especially with different fluctuations of hormones. And also, even there are a number of different types of combined hormone therapies between estrogen and progestins, which is more of the synthetic progesterone, and the different types of estrogens that have really been used to and provided for women. It can be, again, a real challenge now. And something to consider is to be using something like a combined estrogen progestin therapy, or estrogen on its own, or progesterone on its own. There's definitely different information that has been used to suggest and support that use in different women. Typically, what has often been recommended for some women is just to go back to a combined oral contraceptive pill or a birth control pill. And that has some possible treatment for women in terms of cycle irregularity, hot flashes, and mood changes. However, it's definitely something to think about when it comes to how the dose of estrogen on that oral contraceptive is typically higher than any other hormone replacement therapy regime. Some women have also really been looked at in terms of using just simply estrogen therapy or estradiol therapy in perimenopause for mood-related symptoms, and that can show some benefit in some women. But then there's also, you know, something to consider when it comes to really supporting the health of the uterus and ovaries, or with using and adding in a progesterone to balance out that estrogen and progesterone. So again, there really are a number of factors to really consider and to think about when we are talking about that hormone therapy in perimenopause and menopause.
Definitely. Yeah. There's, you know, in perimenopause, the symptoms change through that transition, right? And one of the big complaints is really, really heavy periods and flooding. So using a progesterone can help mitigate that. Some people prefer to use, you know, a Mirena or Kylena progestin IUD. Others prefer a form of progesterone, you know, most likely an oral micronized progesterone, but that can have benefit. You know, if you're going through later perimenopause and you're not getting a period regularly, you're starting to get more hot flashes and vaginal dryness, it may show your estrogens more consistently low. So some practitioners may start to incorporate estrogen with progesterone, either continuously or cyclically, depending on what's going on with you. So there's so many ways to approach it. And hormone replacement therapy really did get a bad rap from the Women's Health Initiative study that was put out, but they've actually done a reanalysis, and they're really realizing that the negative results maybe weren't what they seem to be through this reanalysis, and that there actually are benefits using hormone replacement therapy, potentially in younger women and early postmenopausal women, to help with cardiovascular health, reducing coronary disease and all-cause mortality. We know supporting hormone levels, especially estrogen, can help with that bone health and preventing dementia. So there's more and more research coming out on safer ways to use it and debunking some of the myths that are still out there, and work helping people work through the fear around it, right? So again, yeah, it's not a one size fits all. And we're going to continue to get, I think, more and more studies surrounding the use earlier in perimenopause and the transition to menopause.
Absolutely. I think that research really needs to continue to give us a better picture of how women in perimenopause and menopause respond to different hormone combinations and doses and methods of getting those hormones. I'm especially interested in some of the research coming out through CEMCOR, the Center for Menstrual and ovarian research coming out with through UBC. And they recently are looking at a trial to look at oral micronized progesterone to be used as a therapy for hot flashes and night sweats in perimenopausal women. So not just waiting for getting to menopause. So again, I think this kind of research in looking at all of these different symptoms that we can experience in perimenopause, whether it's hot flashes, night sweats, depression, insomnia, irregular cycles, you know, other issues with our periods, and especially with our brain function and bone health as well, are really key to help to support our vitality and help to support us to, you know, live healthier lives, and especially longer lives as well.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really interesting to think, right? Menopause is a normal phenomenon, right? So our ovaries are going to have less eggs, our hormone production is going to decline. And some people may feel okay not doing any interventions, but, you know, technically, if we didn't do any sort of supports or treatments, women would die earlier, right? So it's like, and also live a life maybe where they don't feel their best, right? So there's two ways to use HRT, and I believe both ways are beneficial. One is through symptom management. That was the old school way of thinking. Let's put them on, you know, estrogen until their hot flashes are gone and their vaginal dryness is managed, or just use the lowest dose. But now they're looking at, again, we're not going to return your hormone levels to when you were having a regular period, but actually what's going to help with your health span, what's going to help with your keeping your bone health up, what's going to help with your mood and preventing dementia and brain health so you can live longer and have a better quality life as well. So I know it's kind of a philosophical question, right? Because people are like, well, why do we need them? But if you could live a little longer and a little healthier, would you take that option? I would.
Yeah. It's definitely a question that that every woman needs to ask for herself, and to really look at what they feel comfortable with and really what they want out of life as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a personal choice.
For sure. So let's switch gears, Lisa. And I'm really curious about your supermom moment for the week.
Yeah. So I'm proud of this one because it brought me back to my childhood. So we were with Stuart at the zoo on Saturday, and there was some puddles, and he was wearing his winter boots. And so they're not super waterproof. So he's jumping in the puddles, and his boots and his socks got soaking wet, and he was miserable. He was feeling a little cold. So we sat down and had some lunch, and then we had an extra pair of socks in his bag. So we put those on, but then I knew his boots were still wet. So I'm like, oh, they're just going to get wet again. But we had plastic bags still, but we had some plastic bags that we had our masks in. So I was like, well, why don't you just put one, you know, a plastic bag over your dry sock and put that into your boot? Because that's what we did as kids. I remember like walking around and you hear the crinkle of the plastic bags in your boots. I don't know why we didn't have waterproof boots, but so I did that with Stuart, and he thought it was like the funniest thing, and his feet stayed dried and he had a fun time walking around with bags on his feet inside his boots.
Oh, Lisa, awesome. That is classic treatment and solution for wet feet and soaked boots. I love it.
Thanks, Tony. And I know you're doing a great job, but can you think of a mama mess up?
Yeah. So I know in a previous episode, you had talked about some challenges getting Stuart ready and out of the door. Definitely recently, I've been having those challenges as well, especially on a Monday morning after having a lot of just relaxing time at home. Trying to get Frankie ready on a Monday morning has been more and more challenging, and just a recent Monday morning. I found after a lot of cajoling and getting impatient, I found myself giving her a little bit of a lecture in the car on the way to day home. And I even found myself telling her that she would be on Santa's naughty list if she was behaving that way, and that she needed to behave properly at day home to get on Santa's nice list. It was definitely not my best moment. Looking back, I just can't believe that, you know, I was saying those things to her. But you find yourself doing that when you're a mom and frustrated with your kids. It was interesting because even when that happened and I dropped her off at day home, usually she'll tell me to have a good day at work, which is really cute. But then this day she told me that I needed to listen to my teacher at work. So
we've used that too. We're trying not to, but sometimes it gets to that point where it's like, okay, who's watching? Santa's watching. And I saw, I have to find the meme. I should post it or try to find it. But it was something to the effect of like, you know, every time you don't listen to your parents, a unicorn dies. Like you tell that to your kid or something. Something so out there when you're at the end of your rope, right?
Oh my goodness.
I'll try to find that meme and link to it because it was like the funniest piece. I couldn't stop laughing. So we're like, yeah, we've been there.
yeah, I need that one. Thanks, Lisa.
And then what is your mama must have for the week, Toni?
Well, my mama must have for this week is definitely enjoying some reality TV shows and getting a little bit of an escape. I've lately been getting an escape with my favorite reality show, Survivor, season 41.
Wow, 41 for real?
41 seasons of Survivor.
How old are we?
Oh yeah, we're a little old. Yeah. It was so wonderful to see it back after they had quite a big break with the pandemic. And then another kind of newer reality show that I've definitely gotten into is, and I'm glad to see that I'm not the only one, is Selling Sunset, a reality show set in California with real estate agents. It's really fun to watch. And, you know, when the newest season came on Netflix, it was definitely top 10. It might even been number one when it first came out. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who has been enjoying that.
Ooh, exciting. We took a break from our Netflix membership, but maybe I'll resubscribe for the next month and over the holidays, check out the Selling Sunset. That sounds right up my alley. And I used to be a huge Survivor fan, so maybe I should check out season 41. Thanks for sharing.
There you go. Some good holiday watching there for you, Lisa.
Good brainless TV. That's what I love.
Exactly. Now, what's your mama must have for this week?
Yeah, I'm just going to celebrate that, you know, in January, I had the intention of reading a bit every day. It was following Gretchen Rubin's, I think it's called, it was 21 and 21. So reading for 21 minutes a day in 2021. It wasn't 21 minutes every day. It was plus or minus, you know, 10 minutes here or there. But I made the intention to read a book every day. And I usually would, you know, I still find time after we put Stuart down, or sometimes in the day on the weekend. And I've blown through 13 books because I love reading. And, you know, before this year, I probably read maybe two or three books if I was on vacation or maybe over the holidays, over the, you know, the whole year. So it's really been filling up my cup. And I'm really reading so many different books that I even just find from those little libraries that people put out in front of their house with those little wooden stands. So I pick up a book, drop off a book, and I've been reading so many cool things. So that's my mama must have, is my reading time.
Awesome. I love it. Thanks for sharing that. And maybe you'll have to post some of your favorite books too.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I will do that.
Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for joining us today. Again, you can find our show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com, and you can connect with us on Instagram and on our Facebook group. We would also love for you to subscribe to the podcast, leave a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And you can also support us on Patreon. And please tell your perimenopausal mamas friends about us too. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Until next time. Bye-bye.